We're talking with Virginia Republican Delegate Nick Freitas. He is also a candidate for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate this year in Virginia. And that primary is coming up sooner than a lot of folks think. It's coming up in June, less than 4 months from now. Sir, why did you decide to throw your hat into the ring?
Well, quite frankly, I think not only the country, but the Republican Party, too, is at a crossroads right now with respect to what it believes. And I want the Republican Party. There's this impulse by some that they want big government Republicanism, where they concede some of the arguments of the progressive left that we need to have this nanny state and it would just be better if Republicans ran it. I completely reject that. I think the Republican Party needs to be the party of individual liberty. It needs to be the party of free markets and opportunity, and it needs to be the party of equal justice before the law. And if we can be that party again, I think it's going to be good for the country, and I think it's going to be good for the Republican Party. But until we have people that are going to get up and I would say boldly and unapologetically argue for those things, argue for what we believe, not simply in a policy discussion, right? It's not just about why we want tax reform or regulatory reform or greater opportunity within education. It's about explaining that the reason why we believe in all of those things goes back to this core fundamental belief and love for the individual person. I really despise how the modern left has managed to categorize people based off of many times superficial distinctions. I always say that the left right now has four questions that they want to ask you. What's your skin color? What's your gender? What's your sexual orientation? And how much money you make? And if you answer those four questions, they put you into a victim group, and there you stay. I don't see people that way. I see people as unique individuals with something to offer both themselves, their families, and society. But the key for them to be able to do that is a government that stays within its constitutional boundaries and protects their liberties and freedom to do so. And so I think when we talk about that messaging and when we start at that point and then we explain why tax reform, why regulatory reform, why greater educational opportunity, why a free market for the healthcare helps the individual achieve all of those things that they want to, allows them to pursue happiness. That's a winning message for the Republican Party. But I want to see more people advocating for it. And so I decided to step up and make the argument.
Delegate Freitas, as far as I can tell, you're one of at least four Republicans in this primary field. And you've also said several times you don't want to make it about bashing them. You want to talk about what you would do. But at the same time, you need to convince folks that you're the best choice of those four. So in addition to what you just said about why you're running, why do you believe you're the right conservative choice compared to whether it's Corey Stewart or Bishop Jackson or the other candidates?
I think I'm probably the only one that is going to make the argument that I just described the way I think it needs to be made. And that's not an attempt to disparage any of the other candidates that are running. I just think that they're going to take a different approach to the Republican message. I think in a lot of ways, it's going to look like the approach that's been used before. And quite frankly, I don't think has worked very well in Virginia. Corey Stewart is obviously going to take a very different approach than I will with respect to addressing these issues and with respect to building the sort of coalitions that we need in Virginia to win elections. Quite frankly, if we want to send support to the president and we want to make sure that his policies on things like tax reform, like regulatory reform, like immigration reform passes, the solution to that is not to yell and scream at everybody in Virginia and treat them like they're idiots if they don't agree with us. The solution is to explain the benefits of those policies in such a way that they can relate to and feel an urge to support. And so there's a way to go about doing that, and I think I have the ability to do that from the standpoint of articulating that message. But then I've also got experience doing it. And when I talk about my experience, I don't just mean in the Virginia General Assembly or in local grassroots politics. My whole job in the military was about working with people that, quite frankly, didn't agree with one another on a variety of situations, where in many cases the stakes were pretty high. And I feel I was able to do that successfully. And I think that we can use that same experience right now in the current political narrative.
Why should Tim Kaine be fired? Obviously, you disagreed deeply on a lot of philosophical points, but what is it about his record that you believe disqualifies him from another term?
Well, I think if we look at everything from his stance to the FISA court, where he was willing to simply renew authority for FISA courts without any sort of reform that ensured American citizens had their Fourth Amendment protections in place. I think something like that. I think the fact that he generally supports tax increases, he generally supports greater regulations on businesses to include small family-owned businesses. The fact that when it comes to issues like the life issue, he cannot even be dependent upon to protect basic things that the vast majority of Americans agree on with respect to late-term abortions. I think also when we talk about the core fundamental difference between Tim Kaine and I, it's not that Tim is a horrible guy or a mean guy. Tim believes that the solution to our problems is more government control. Tim fundamentally believes that if he has more control over our lives, he'll make things better. Well, he's been in government 27 years now. He was government specifically in Richmond as a council member, as a mayor, later as a governor. 20 of our 30 failing schools in Virginia are right around the Richmond area. So those areas where he has had the most control, he has not improved the situation. On the other side, I believe that the way to achieve greater not only economic opportunity but greater equality before the law is by dispersing power, by taking it out of the hands of politicians and putting more control of decisions back in the hands of individuals. It's that parent that, you know, their child has been consigned to a failing school. You know, giving that parent more options over where their child can go to school in order to craft a unique education for their child. It's that person that wants to engage in the marketplace but can't because federal regulations are holding them back. It's the additional tax burden which prevents the families from doing the things they need to do in order to be successful. So from individual policy perspectives all the way down to the core fundamental difference between Tim Kaine and I is Tim believes in controlling people. I believe in freeing people to be able to live their own lives. And that's going to influence every decision, and that's going to be the starkest contrast between Tim Kaine and myself.
I don't need to tell you, sir, that 2017 was not a great year for Republicans in the state of Virginia. All the statewide races went to the Democrats, the governor's race by a much wider than expected margin. So what's it going to take to defeat Tim Kaine in Virginia just a year after the Democrats did very well there?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to understand about the Virginia politics is that we are one of, I believe, only two states that actually has a gubernatorial election right after a presidential year election. And there is a tradition in Virginia, there's a history in Virginia, which I think has only been broken with a couple of times, where typically speaking, whatever party wins the White House, they don't do as well in the follow-on year in Virginia. So I don't think we should look at 2017 as a harbinger of what's to come. It's more a part of the typical cycle that we see in Virginia politics. Having said that, we do also need to learn that there is a proper way to talk about conservative principles and there's a less effective way to talk about conservative principles. And when we focus once again on empowering the individual to achieve things, And we tie it back to that core philosophy, I think our policy positions make a lot more sense to people. But for too long, I think Republicans have simply assumed that we can get out there and say, lower taxes, less government, and that's going to convince people. We have to first explain why those things are important on an individual level, then explain the policy position. When we do that, I find that we get a lot further. I'll give you a perfect example of this. I have A ratings from every conservative group out there, whether it's American Conservative Union, Family Foundation, NRA, VCDL, you name it, Americans for Prosperity, etc. I have people that are definitely left of center in my district support me and not just come out and vote, but actively go out and support my candidacy against a liberal progressive Democrat. And the reason for that was not because I was a squish on the issues. It wasn't because I walked away from tough votes. It wasn't any of that. It was because I found the issues where there was overlap. So, for instance, I think we need criminal justice reform. And so I'm carrying the bill on civil asset forfeiture reform to make sure the government can't take your property and sell it off without a criminal conviction. I've carried the legislation that removes onerous regulations on growing industrial hemp in Virginia because, quite frankly, our farmers need this and people want access to the products. And so I've been able to talk with people that agree with me on those issues, build those relationships, work on that important legislation. They may call it liberal legislation. We call it liberty-minded or conservative legislation. At that point, it doesn't matter. If it's the right thing to do and we can work together on it, then let's spend the time doing that. And so I found that one does not have to compromise any of their conservative principles to get a wide base of support. But they do have to spend the time learning how to talk to people in a way that's relevant to them, identifying the issues that are important when there's room for cooperation, and then spending the time and effort to actually get the legislation passed. And I've been able to do that, and I've seen success not just politically, but more importantly, from a policy perspective.
Let's briefly look at Washington. What's your assessment of the Senate GOP majority so far? They got a win on taxes, but spending has not been curtailed, and obviously repealing Obamacare didn't work out too well last summer. So what's your take on their approach, what they've been able to accomplish, and how you'd like to see it change?
Well, I think the administration and the Senate does deserve a lot of credit for the tax reform. Of course, there's things that we'd like to see that would be better. However, this was definitely a step in the right direction. And so I applaud them for that. It's difficult to do. This has been the most substantive tax reform we've had in a generation, and they should definitely be proud of that. I also applaud the administration with respect to some of the regulatory reforms they've done, which, gosh, have been the most substantive probably in 100 years. However, I am very frustrated with respect to this latest budget. And obviously, you have people like Senator Rand Paul, Senator Mike Lee, and some others that have fought against this. But we need a conservative majority within the United States Senate, within the Republican caucus in the United States Senate, that is, again, willing to argue for tough decisions. Right. Everybody loves to cut taxes. Nobody loves to cut spending, except for very few people. And that's because we're not going out there and actually making the argument for why this sort of government spending is not appropriate and what it's going to mean for our children and future generations. And getting out there and making those arguments is critical to changing public opinion on these issues. So and until we have more people that are willing to make that argument and willing to stand by their position, stand by what they ran on, we're going to continue to see a situation where, okay, we may get some victories on one side, but then we're not willing to make the hard decisions with respect to spending that actually make the tax cuts, which actually make some of the other policy positions that we're advocating for sustainable over time.
Would you be a vote for Mitch McConnell as leader?
I'm not going to commit to vote for Mitch McConnell. No, I would not. It doesn't mean that I don't have respect for Republican senators, but with respect to leadership, I want to see someone that is going to push a bold and unapologetic argument for conservative principles. If we're running on it, we shouldn't be afraid to legislate it. And I've had some frustration with leadership in D.C. with respect to that. So, no, Mitch McConnell should not count on my vote should I be elected to the United States Senate. But that's obviously, you know, clearly that's going to be a discussion when we get up there. I will say this. I don't like it when we go up there and we look at these votes for leadership and we don't offer an alternative. So I'll say this much. If conservatives want to lead in the Senate, well, then we need to offer people that are willing to stand up and be in leadership positions. And I would look very forward to various candidates that might be willing to do that.
Lastly, sir, how can folks learn more about your campaign and assist if they wish to?
Well, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our website is www.nickforsenate.com. We keep regular updates on the website, and we're posting on Twitter and Facebook every day, so it's a great place to keep up with what we're doing down here in the Virginia General Assembly and the campaign trail as well, and we look forward to hearing from people and working with people.
Nick, really appreciate your time today, sir. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nick Freitas is a Republican delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates. He's also a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in Virginia. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.